Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Gabrielle Pisano. How are you, Gabrielle?
Fine, and you?
I am excellent, excellent. We're still recording at the London Wine Fair. You're one of my last interviews for the show.
The best to the end, you know?
Best to the end. Well, I don't know if it's going to be best. It's going to be an unusual wine we're going to be talking about.
That's for sure.
But you're from the winery Pisano. You're the winemaker there. And are you the head winemaker, Gabrielle?
Well, yeah, we are five winemakers for being a small winery. That's a lot. Actually, my uncle is the head winemaker, but he is more in the boring stuff, like buying bottles and corks. And I'm in charge of the wines, literally. Yeah,
top of the wines. Okay, and your winery is in Uruguay.
Yes, it's in Uruguay, in South America. This is in the south, between two big brothers. Like it's Brazil, between Brazil and Argentina.
So you're south of Brazil and to the right of Argentina.
Exactly.
And it's coastal as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the only wine region that is influenced by the Atlantic Ocean of South America.
I thought some of the regions in Argentina, like Rio Negro, had a little bit of coastal influence.
No, they are more to the Andes side.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the vineyards are not to the coast region.
Okay. We covered Uruguay wines a couple of years ago, but if anybody's like myself, they probably won't remember too much about it. So do you want to just give us a quick overview of the winery and where it's located and a wee bit about the Uruguayan wine regions?
Okay. Would be a pleasure, because we are very used to do it, because as you say, when you talk about Uruguay, nobody's is thinking about wine, probably football or something like that.
I must admit, I used to think Uruguay was above Chile on the left-hand side, not below Brazil on the east.
No, not below Brazil, yeah, that's true. Well, talking about Uruguay, you know, we are a small country, and we have all the population came from Spanish or Italian immigrants. Like my family is an Italian, so most of the people we are used to drink wine, you know, and to eat beef. As I told you, we have a lot of cows and we like to grill a lot. So Uruguay, all the wine region is, you know, as I told you, like 90% of the vineyards are in the really close to the sea. It's like Pisano. It's 30 kilometers from north of the sea.
So I'm just looking at a map of Uruguay. Is that there?
We are in Progreso, in the Canelones region. It's just in the north of Montevideo, where is our capital.
Okay. Oh, that's quite handy, though, from a wine tourism point of view, if you're really close to a big city.
We are really close. And that is because immigrants always, they came first to the port, and then they just moved as little as they can.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's the reason why also to sell the wine was easier to be close to the capital.
Yeah.
And it's where is the half of the population of Uruguay. That is 1.5 million.
Is the population of Uruguay?
That's the population of Montevideo.
Oh.
And all the country, it's 3 million people.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's the main city, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Well, we like to say that Montevideo is our capital, is our big city, but then the rest of the country, it's empty. Okay. Just cows, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you're big beef eaters, aren't you?
Yes, we love. Actually, I think we are the country that we eat more beef per capita in the world.
Even more than Argentinians?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And the thing about beef is, goes really well with tannic red wines.
It goes really, really well with red wines and with tannat exclusively.
Yeah, tannic and tannat, because tannat is very tannic. That's the way I remember it, actually.
Yeah, it is a very tannic grape, but we have learned how to make those tannins round and mature. Mm-hmm. That's the secret.
I've got a little name check for you in the Hugh Johnson Jensis Robinson's Concise World Atlas of Wine, unquote. However, Gabrielle Pisano, that'll be you, a member of the youngest generation of winemaking family, has developed a liquid tannat of rare intensity and serving old vine. What is that word? Barrique.
Arriague.
Well, I'm going to explain what Arriague is. Arriague is the name of the Basque immigrant who put the Tanat in Uruguay.
Oh.
At the beginning, they didn't know which the name of the variety. So we call it Arriague for like 80 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then we start call it Tanat. But it's the same. It's a vine that come from south of France, from Madiran. But then we have the like the biggest plantation of Tanat in the world, even more than in France.
Yep.
Because in France the Tanat gets like more aggressive, you know.
They
cannot manage the tannins, but luckily we can. You know, it's about climate and terroir. You know, who knows?
But Uruguay is quite a humid country, isn't it? It's quite warm.
Well, not that warm. We have like during the summer, 33 could be max 33 degrees, and during the day and during the night, we have all the wind come from the sea. It can go to 15 or 17. So that makes our climate. We said to the wine people, in order to know where it is, it's like a Bordeaux climate.
Like what? Bordeaux,
yeah.
But it's more humid, though, isn't it? Or is
no.
It? No, it's not too bad.
We have like 1,700-800 millimeters. It's much more than in Mendoza.
Yeah.
But it's not like a tropical country.
Yeah. Well, 1,700 is still quite a bit. Yeah, I always think of things like Rías Baixas in Spain, and that's about 1.5 meters of rain.
Well, we
consider that wet. So you're 1.7. So you're, you know, Bordeaux's, what's Bordeaux, 900?
I'm not sure, but the thing is that the rains, most of the rains come in winter.
Okay.
So
it's not too bad.
Yeah.
Okay. So in Jensis and Hugh Johnson's book, they clock you for liquid tannate. We're actually going to talk about sparkling tannate, but before we get into sparkling tannate, tell me about liquid tannate. I presume it's a port style, is it?
It is a... We call it sui generis style. It's actually both the sparkling and the liquor were to my first project in the winery. When I finished my winemaking school, I went to the winery and I told my family, okay, I'm going to do things. Wine, you know, there was a lot. So, okay, what we need, what I can develop? And they said, oh, no, we don't know. You just... try to do something. So I said, okay, we don't have a dessert wine, so let's try to make a liquor of tanat.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at the beginning I was they call liquor, it's like it's a dessert fortified tanat wine.
Mm-hmm.
It has it's a mix of techniques from port style, but then it has like a recioto and amarone style. I make a strange
So did you dry the grapes out?
Sorry?
Amarone and Ricciotto, they dry the grapes before they make the wine. So you tried that?
Well, most of the wine is just a ripe, very ripe, overripe grape from tannin. So then I pick, but then I let some of the grapes in the vine.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Then I make a... sorry about the, I don't know the words.
How to say it.
No, I crush.
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
So then when it is fermenting... I let ferment for 5-6 days, and then I add grappa.
Yeah, yeah.
So alcohol come from grapes, and then when everything is mixed, I pick the rest of the grapes that I let on the vines and put there just to get an extraction. You know.
Yeah.
So it's something really, really strange.
Yeah. Okay. So you've. Okay, because
you get the wine at the beginning, like halfway, because it's still a lot of residual sugar. So we add the grappa. But then, when it's not fermenting anymore,
because the alcohol is too
high, I add some grapes, it's a raisin grapes, to the mix.
Mm-hmm.
And I let them there for 20 days.
Yeah.
You know, something like this. And then I press everything.
Yeah.
So you get rising aromas that are very good. But this is not the Uruguayan style. It's Pisano style.
That's
different compared to the others.
Yeah, the problem I would see with that, and you can tell me why it's not a problem, is as the high alcohols are very good solvents, or they extract tannins really well. So if you've got a very tannic grape variety and you're putting it in a very high alcohol wine.
Yeah, but the difficult tannins from the tannat are on the seed. So if you don't crush, if you don't break the skin, doesn't matter.
Well,
you don't extract those tannins, you know?
The astringent tannins.
The astringent tannins, yes.
Okay, so you're landing up with a very grippy but ripe tannins.
Exactly.
Okay. All right, and then you crush it, so then you're getting more sweetness because that fruit wouldn't have fermented.
More sweetness, but mostly in the aroma because the level of sugar that is on the wine is like 100 grams per liter, so that's a lot. So then you get good alcohol, but not too much. We go until 16.5, mm-hmm. and then like 100 grams of sugar, residual sugar, and then lot of tannin. So it's a bomb wine.
Yeah. I suppose the nice thing is tannins tend to hide, sugar tends to hide tannins.
Yes.
So a sweet wine, you may not notice the tannins quite
exactly,
so much.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, the one I really wanted to talk to you about, though, that was just a sort of side note there, was your sparkling tannat, because that's like the only people I know silly enough to make a sparkling red wine are the Aussies. So.
Yeah, but they make it sweet, sparkling.
They do make it sweet. And I thought when you said you were making a sweet tannat, I was thinking it's got to be a sweet red like the Aussies do.
No, it's a Brut Nature.
Yeah, well, that's just asking for problems. So tell me about your sparkling red.
Well, as I told you at the beginning of the interview, it was like a challenge for me when I finished winemaking school. My teacher told me never to put together tannins with a cold wine and
acidity.
And acidity, yeah. And CO2, because that will become awful.
Yeah,
so
coldness makes tannins more obvious.
Exactly. So it was the first thing that I did after my winemaking school, you know, and it was a surprise for us that it works, you know. It's a very particular wine. It's a sparkling that we made to eat, you know.
Yeah.
And well, now as still as we know, is the only sparkling tannat of the world.
Yeah. Is it popular though? There might be a reason why it's the only one, mate.
Yeah, no. First of all, it is it because nobody's so crazy as to do it, but it's much more popular in the rest of the world. I mean, we export to like 45 countries, and we export much more than what we drink domestically.
Okay, so you do get it away reasonably
yes,
well.
Yes, yes. It was a surprise, as I told you, like in Germany and in Czech Republic, in Brazil. We are selling pretty good. Even I didn't tell you about the history of the winery, but we are a small winery, so we are not focused in sparkling wine. We just do much for ourselves. But then we are doing like 3,000 bottles of sparkling tannat, and we export most of it. You know, it's a wine that it's dry. As I told you, it's a Brut Nature. But it's very good to eat like fatty things, fatty food,
yeah.
Because you need something to rinse, you know, your mouth.
Tannins can be quite cleansing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay. What sort of method do you use? Is it a tank method, traditional method? How
it's
do you make?
Traditional method. We overripe a little bit the grapes in order to get the round tannins, you know, and then we ferment. We do just a base tannat wine. And then we do a traditional champenois method. After the fermentation is over, we wait as much as we can. Depends, maybe 1 year or 1 year and a half in the lees, you know, in order to get fattiness.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we just degorge and we fill the bottle with just another a brother bottle.
Oh, you top it up.
Yeah,
that's a. Interesting style of wine. You say you only make about 3,000 bottles, though, so
yes.
It's not a big crop.
No, it's not. As I told you, we made like 300,000 bottles of wine, and we are prepared for doing like table wines, not sparkling. So for us, it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's something that we do because we like, and well, now it's also business, you know. It's getting bigger also.
And do you do, like, the disgorgement, do you do it by hand?
Oh, everything by hand. When you know, a couple of years ago, we get a champagne visitor in the winery, was a friend of us, and when we show him the way we do, he was surprised, and we said, yeah, we know we are a little bit old style, and he told us, yes, but this is not old style, this is primitive. We do everything by hand, everything.
No gyro pallets. No, or not like not riddling, no. But hand,
yeah,
riddling
by hand. Yes, like this.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. So, you said you sell it in Brazil. You sell it in Argentina.
Well, in Argentina, with a little bit. Mostly in Brazil is our, well, the States and the UK and Brazil are our main markets. But yeah, we export to the island of Malta, to Caribbean, all of Europe, mostly.
Have you ever thought of making a sparkling wine out of Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, perhaps?
We also
oh,
do.
You do?
Yeah, we do. But we mostly, as I told you, it's very expensive to do it because it's everything by hand. So we mostly do for ourselves and we sell domestically.
Okay. All right. Do you think it's, like you said, it's 3,000 bottles, which is about 1% of your production, so it's tiny.
Yeah.
Tiny. Do you think it's going to ramp up?
It is. Every year it's going up. But, you know, we increase 500 or 1,000 bottles each year.
Okay. And it's all selling out or pretty
yeah,
much?
Yeah. No. We sell it everything.
And is it a premium price? Do you make lots of money from that wine or is it?
We lost money actually in that wine because for us it's really expensive to do it. So we made it something.
You won't be making wine so much longer if you keep making
No, because it's something, it's like with the liquor of Tanat, you know? It's something else to show. It's something to look for attention like you do.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
You did, you know?
It's
like this. To journalists, they love to see, different things.
So you've lured me in with your tannin.
But as I told you, it doesn't get that expensive. But for us, our winery is not prepared to do that. So we do everything by hand. So we do it when we have no lights, you know, electricity problems is something that we can do.
Oh, do you have problems with electricity? No, in Uruguay?
Not a lot, but sometimes, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so when you lose your electricity, you can't do anything, so you send the guys in to do the disgorging.
Exactly.
Nice. I like it.
Just remember that I don't talk pretty much about the winery. It's a family-owned winery, you know. Now it's run by my father, who take care about the vineyard. And then my uncle Daniel, who is in sales. And then Gustavo is the winemaking, you know, the head winemaker. And then my grandmother still lives there. We all live in Progreso, in the same region that where is the winery. Mm-hmm. Actually, my house is surrounded by vines. So, you know, in Uruguay, it's very different compared with our brothers from Argentina because most of the wineries are family-owned. That is something that we are proud of, you know, and we love to do that way. We don't have the huge wine factories for saying in some way. Every different winery has their style and very personal, you know. We it's not that we are blind and we don't listen to the market, but we are lucky and we can do whatever we want, you know. Because people is not expecting for something special.
Yeah.
They like, with Uruguayan wines, they like the personality of the wines.
Excellent. All right then, Gabriel. I think we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. Thank you very much for the interview.
Cheers, bud.